This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Olivia Eberts. The two major coronavirus relief bills Congress passed delivered huge sums to Alaska tribes. The dollar amounts were unprecedented, and the distribution was uneven, with one small interior Alaska tribe taking in nearly $1 million per person. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
The CARES Act sent more than $300 million in direct payments to Alaska tribes and Native corporations. But that's modest compared to the tribal payments that came when Congress passed the American Rescue Plan Act. ARPA sent Alaska tribes $1.4 billion. It will change how Alaska tribes plan for their future, says Teresa Jacobson, chair of the Alaska Tribal Administrators Association.
This is just really an amazing and special time for tribes to have the resources to meet critical needs in the communities that have not been met.
Alaska has more than 220 tribes that got direct payments from the coronavirus bills. The average allocation was nearly $8 million, and every tribe got at least $2.6 million. Some of the tribes have only a few dozen members, or fewer. Jacobson says tribes are buying ambulances and equipment for their health clinics and planning utility upgrades. She says it's a lot to manage for a smaller tribe used to an annual budget of maybe $300,000.
We have people that have called and said they're scared and they're overwhelmed, but they're also grateful and excited at the same time.
The Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development did a deep dive on the ARPA distribution to tribes, focusing on the per-person amount each tribe got. What they found is that small tribes got an outsized share of the funds, thanks to the formula the government used to distribute the money. Harvard Project co-director Joseph Kalt says once ARPA became law in March, the Treasury Department was under pressure to quickly send money to the tribes.
But in the process, they produced results, allocations of monies that I think are fairly judged to be highly inequitable.
Two tribes really stood out in Kalt's analysis, one in Alaska and one in California. They each reported having just three members and got around $3 million from the two coronavirus bills, or about $1 million per person. One of those was Tulaita in interior Alaska. Tulaita Chief Stephen Nikolai Sr. didn't want to do a taped interview, but he put the size of the tribe somewhat higher. He says it has about five members. That still leaves Tulaita with a bit more than $500,000 per tribal member. Chief Nikolai says the tribe hasn't decided how to spend its money. They are thinking about installing piped water in their homes so they don't have to fetch water from the river. Kalt, from the Harvard Project, says he doesn't begrudge the tribe's good fortune, but he says Tulaita is very much the exception.
Just under 90% of all citizens are in tribes that got less than $10,000 per capita.
Alaska's largest tribe, by far, is the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes. It got nearly $200 million from the two coronavirus bills. But with more than 32,000 members, that amounts to only $6,000 per citizen. In the village of Circle, Tribal Grants Administrator Tony Wheel is eyeing deadlines and program rules. So far, Wheel says, the tribe of 300 has built six cabins, supplied food, and made improvements to the homes of the 85 members who live in Circle.
We purchased a lot of the households that are under income wood and fuel. We also replaced everyone's tanks and stands for the Toyo stove. We've done a lot of great things for the community.
Circle received $4.4 million from the two coronavirus bills. But that's just the direct tribal payments. Wheel says she participates in weekly calls to learn about the other funds in the COVID relief bills that tribes have to apply for separately.
A lot of tribes don't know what they're eligible for, nor do they know the loopholes.
And the clock is ticking. For the bulk of the ARPA payments, tribes have until the end of 2024 to allocate the funds. Nobody wants to leave money sitting on the table. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Up next in YK Delta Fish News, should the state increase protections for Kuskokwim River Chinook and Chum salmon? That was a question that was raised in this month's State Fishery Management Advisory Meeting. KYUK's Greg Kim reports there was some back and forth between the state and local advisors about whether the state should do so immediately.
In a Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group meeting earlier this month, Jim Simon asked state fishery managers a question. Simon is not a working group member, but an anthropologist who works for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission.
I'm just wondering, how bad does it have to get for the department to consider making a stock of concern designation for Kuskokwim River Chinook salmon and being ready to do the same for Chum salmon?
Stock of concern is a designation the state uses to say, we're worried about this species of fish.
That triggers a development of an action plan to amend or update or change existing regulations that are designed to get out of that stock of concern.
That's John Linderman, the regional supervisor for the State Department of Fish and Game's Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Region Office.
Which, by and large, means that you're probably going to have to restrict fishing opportunity.
In the state working group meeting, Linderman said the department would be considering whether Kuskokwim Chinook and Chum salmon should receive the stock of concern designation next year. Working group member Kevin Whitworth of McGrath asked, why wait?
I'm wondering why you need this extra year of data. Why can't you just use the past 2-3 years of data or traditional knowledge or what we're seeing here in the river? I think there's a lot of data now supporting a stock of concern for both Chum and Chinook.
Linderman said that another year of data on salmon numbers would help solidify the trends that have been occurring on the Kuskokwim.
When you're evaluating stock of concerns, you're looking at 5-year time frames. Now, if you think about it in terms of Chum salmon, only 2 of those years have seen a crash. 3 years did not.
That does not answer why the department needs to wait another year to evaluate stock of concern designation for Chinook salmon. But Linderman says the criteria for the designation is complicated. He also told KYUK that the stock of concern designation may not make any real difference in regulations. He said the state has designated both Kuskokwim Chinook and Chum as a stock of concern in the past. He said the state added stricter regulations for the fish back then and then maintained them even after the state dropped the stock of concern title.
Is there much more that can be done given the status of current regulations and the history of having regulations put in place to address stocks of concern that are still in play, that are still available and in the regulation books, perhaps?
The federal government has taken over management of the lower Kuskokwim fishery in recent years, which could make stricter state regulations a moot point. But last year, the state announced a fishing opening on their own without the support of federal managers. The Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group requested the state to explain in a later meeting how it determines whether a fish population is a stock of concern. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
This is KYUK News. I'm Olivia Eberts. Koyana for listening. Please email us your news tips, questions, and feedback to news@kyuk.org or message KYUK on Facebook. And stay tuned for News Yuktoon coming up.